from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the GoodAtheist.net podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Jeffrey Jones.
And before we start the show, I have to say that this is the... We're re-recording this podcast.
The first half.
The first half of it, yeah. Not the second half. But the first half is being re-recorded because... Well, originally, the first podcast was about this one guy called Josh Weed.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I say that, I want to say
Josh
Weed.
You want to say Josh Weed, don't you?
I do.
I do, too.
I'm going to fight that urge. But anyways, this guy... Wrote a blog post that kind of made it big. It went on Gawker, and everybody was talking about it because here was a gay man who came out of the closet, but saying that, well, I'm going to keep my marriage to this woman, and it's the best thing is to live a lie, and yeah, and I'm super happy.
See this smile?
The smile is gigantic, so...
Not medically enhanced.
And we had... When we first did the podcast, we were all under the impression that, okay, he's a therapist, but we had no real proof that he was saying anything like that to any of his patients. And because I guess we're just nice folks... And
well,
we
I suspected.
Believe, oh, well,
I
there
suspected.
Was... Yeah, there was some... Yeah. Of course, everyone suspected, but I wanted to see some hard proof before I fucking spoke on it. So I tried to be a bit of a devil's advocate. But upon further research, this is not the case at all. He is one of these gay to straight style therapists. Mm-hmm. And because the internet will find shit out.
Yep, it's someone will check your facts.
The millions of trolls will do their duty if you do something that displeases them.
Well, it wasn't... I don't think it was a question of trolls. It's just that as someone who's somewhat in tune with the gay blogosphere, like, as soon as this went off, like, people everywhere were like, we got to figure out what this guy's about. And, of course, it didn't take long before someone found out, of course, that he's one of the counselors at LifeStar Washington, which is a clinic that helps you get rid of porn addiction.
So, well, they call it sexual impulses as well, like just
impulses.
A very generic thing, because if you go on their website and you go to their frequently asked questions or you go to their about us page, they are not explicit about the fact that they try this, you know, gay to straight therapy, although the profiles of the counselors do mention it, because I guess, you know, you can't hide it forever.
Exactly. And I like the phase. The phases and stuff, because it's just vague enough that they don't have to say anything. But like, you look at phase two, it's the recovery group, and like during phase two, it's all about like, see, this is the thing, is they're so vague, like they don't say anything about it. They're just like, take a deep look at their partner's addiction and how it affects their thinking and behavior and blah blah. I'm like, guys aren't saying anything here, so I'm curious. Although they are saying it's $200 a month per person for phase two, so. Liking vagina is cheap.
Yeah, it seems pretty pricey. I mean, this is they're obviously trying to make money. Here's what I found. Well, we're going to talk about what I find interesting about LifeStar in general. But first, I want to bring it back to Josh for 5 seconds and to really identify sort of elements in his blog post that most people were like, you know, that obviously sent some bad signals. Now, the first one was saying, okay, obviously he understands that his Mormon faith and his homosexual cravings, yeah, they're not really that compatible. You know?
Yeah.
Sort of God is a clear homophobe, does not like the gays.
There we go. That's like the first contortionist act of the blog post.
Right. So that's and you know it's a bad sign. As soon as you bring one of those in, it's like, oh, he's religious. Well, that's gonna turn out good.
Yeah, there you go.
So he has that going for him. And then he basically says, well, I'm married. and I have kids. And according to his own blog post, they were aware of his homosexuality while they were trying to get married. So this was an issue that has sort of like kind of popped up, being like, well, I'm gay, but can we get married and have kids? And then I'm just going to sort of like live that lie. This is what the blog post suggests.
So do you take this woman to be your awfully wedded lie?
Yeah, pretty much. And yeah. There were a few things that were just both tragic and hilarious about the post, because I did write about this as well. And the first part that I found to be kind of incredible to me was this notion from the guy saying, like, well, you know, although I'm clearly attracted to men, I'm able to have very intimate sex with my wife, and that part is enjoyable, and ergo that's sex.
That reminds me of Tobias from Arrested Development. You know, it's like, yeah. Sometimes under periods of, you know, extreme stress and under, like, what was it, under, like, very serious concentration, the man can, like, impregnate the woman. I forget what it is, but it sounds...
penetrate her.
No, but you know what, you remember the scene, though?
I do, yeah.
Anybody who watches Arrested Development, and if you're not watching it, you should watch it. There's a character named Tobias Fumke who's played by David Cross. Yeah. And he is the most hilarious
closet
unaware
case.
Homosexual closet case there is. And yeah. When I hear and Joshua Weed, like when I read his blog post, I'm giving him David Cross's voice. And it puts everything like right into perspective. I'm like, I know who you are.
Well, it's funny too, because you know, I have to believe that the reason at first that what he was writing was compelling, because he has to kind of buy his own bullshit, right? You have to,
yeah.
I mean, he is having intercourse with this woman, and I'm trying to put myself in a position, like the reverse position of saying, okay, well now you just have to.
His wife is too.
Yeah, well, now you're forced to now have sex with someone of the same sex, and you're like, well, I'm going to focus on the intimacy, and you know what? That's what I would do, of course, because what else are you going to do? Because the other part of it, the I would say the important part is just not happening. What a terrifying! How terrifying is that?
There is only so much satisfying sex you can have with a woman wearing a Hulk mask.
Or in one of those, you know, muscle suits.
There we go. Like Bono wore during, like, the Pop Mart tour.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we're taking that home, baby.
This will really spruce up our love life, our intimacy life.
Our intimacy life. Oh, yeah, it was directly from the Tom Cruise handbook
of
just how to pretend to be straight. And there's a part of you that I think... I wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt, because in a sense, I was just feeling sorry for a human being.
I feel sorry for him too. And there's to a degree, I feel sorry for him. But at the same time, my original stance on this, and I don't know if the original recording will be available at some point.
Never.
Never. Good. Cause so the acrobats don't get to hear my slight. Anyways, the point I was trying to make was even though I felt sorry for him, I feel sorry for him, but he was doing damage just by doing this anyway, even if he wasn't an ex-gay therapist, by giving credence to it. So my empathy for him is kind of counterbalanced with my empathy for every gay person who talks to him in therapy. And that's before, because he knew it was going to cloud his judgment. But now it just turns out to be like, it's an active part of it. Well... sympathy's out the window.
Oh yeah, no, totally,
like,
out the
you
window.
Know what
but
you're
I'm
doing.
I'm trying to identify why I could fall, and I mean, not that I fell for it, but that I was just still looking for something to pity, right? Because at the end of the day, my solution for him, by the way, was simply, I think you need to get fucked by a dude.
I think that would help him loosen up. it works wonders for me. Like, seriously. Whew, what the hell with a back rub?
Yeah, yeah. Do you want to trade that with intimacy?
Candles? No, thanks. Exactly.
Yeah.
No, I'll trade you a Sarah McLachlan CD for a hard fuck any day of the week. Thank you.
Well, that's a lovely way of putting it. And you're giving me imagery here. The Sarah McLachlan, no.
What if I'm a gay man, not a lesbian. Jeez. Please address all hate mail to ArtieAdams@gmail.com.
Right. Please do. I don't want to deal with any of it.
Yeah. Anyways, I just think that the best comparison I can think of is if we were to compare religion to drugs, like good old generic moderate Christianity would be like pot, and then like Mormonism would be like the crack cocaine.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like, it's hardcore and it is fucking to the letter.
Yeah, evangelical Christianity is like bath salts. Yeah.
There we go. Exactly. And perfectly legal. But yeah, it's that level. So it's like, it's clouding his, it has been clouding his judgment, and it's going to spread itself to other people. And it's like, I'm sorry, you need to, someone needs to take you aside and be like, do your wife and kids a favor and stop trying to make your worldview, like stop trying to twist your worldview to fit this fantasy that you have.
I can only imagine the future confusion that this will bring to human beings. I mean, already the whole affair is confusing because they're introducing an element of nonsense in there. They're like, absolutely. I don't know what to do about my sexuality and my religion. Your religion is false.
Yeah, like the easiest thing is like, how about you think your religion is wrong? And then all of a sudden, hey, looking at dick isn't so guilty.
Well, it turns out that when you actually try to find out a natural explanation to things and you see that in nature, I think specifically when we look at, you know, species of giraffe or penguins or lions and things like that, and you're just like, wow, all of this really gay behavior is happening. And you then in nature, and then you realize it makes you realize one thing that I think people are always afraid of is that there's a kind of very loose, difficult to define barrier between femaleness and maleness.
And that, you mean gender identity?
Gender identity, and that certain things like sexual attraction, for instance, could be, well, I don't want to say fragile because that would indicate that they can be, you know, broken. But merely more malleable than we think, where it's just sort of like, it's like a switch.
One of the things, I worked at an LGBT crisis line a couple years back. Incidentally, if anyone is thinking of doing it, it is really rewarding work, and I recommend volunteering. It's something that I wish I could still do, but because of the nature of my job, I can't really do it. Too much time on the phones. One of the first things that you learn, like, is sexuality is a fluid thing. It's not set in stone. So it's just something you kind of have to accept. And these people, like, I guess they just have like the gender binaries. And then of course they have their Bible code, which says, this is yes, this is no. If you think two, do what you can to think one.
Yeah. Well, it's just, I think that truth is what terrifies people. Even people who would normally be on the side of gay rights are still very uncomfortable by these notions.
Well, bisexuality, pansexuality, asexuality are all elements of the same, let's say, the queer umbrella. But even then, they're kind of on the fringe, almost like the same with transgender. It's just certain people are accustomed to certain definitions. And certain other people, like, so even within the gay community, these elements specifically, I know, like, there's more headway now being put in through with bisexuality. Transgender is kind of, for me, a separate thing as far as social movements go. But just to talk in terms of bisexuality, attraction, let's say, bisexuality and pansexuality, asexuality, all that, that's still on the outskirts, and there is some discrimination within the gay community. It's like either you're gay or you're not gay, and if you're bisexual, then you're just playing the field, and you're either sitting on the fence or you're that's not just reserved for the religious right, or even for religious people in general. Or it's really something that happens in the gay community too. It's everywhere.
Well, there's just strong cultural forces that tend to want to separate the two, because I think that but once in a while we actually see sort of movements of androgyny, you know, like a kind of David Bowie style, or even now with the emo movement, which is pretty androgynous in my opinion.
I would say there's an element of that, but I don't think that's done so much as a conscious means to move the culture forward. So much as a...
No, but there's periods where that happens. Like I was doing some research actually just this morning for I don't know what reason, but I wanted to find out in that song, Yankee Doodle went to town riding on a pony, stuck a feather up his hat and called macaroni. I'm like, why is it called macaroni?
I thought it was just to rhyme.
No, there's a reason for that. The macaronis were kind of very, I think it's in the 17th century, were very effeminate men that wore these gigantic plumed hats and wigs and things like that. So a macaroni is kind of like the further version of the dandy.
Oh,
now,
okay.
You know, when I say dandy, though, here's what's hilarious. Dandy was actually a masculine response to the macaronis.
That's kind of funny. Although it makes total sense now that I think about it. Like, it totally makes sense now, because you had actually posted about this earlier, the macaroni on your Facebook.
Yeah. I was like, Lady Gaga's got nothing on the macaronis.
There you go. And, so I read about that earlier, and I'm like, oh, shit, look at that. So now the pieces of the puzzle fit together.
Well, think about this. The dandies, here's another example, right? The dandies, the reason, what they were like were pretty much middle-class men that were kind of like today's metrosexuals, right?
Okay.
So very concerned with looking immaculate and being prim and proper and looking good and pruning and things like that. And these, now in other species, I would say are sort of like tendencies that tend to be more towards the sex that's trying to do the displaying, right?
Okay.
But in some species, it's the females. In most species, it's the males. We have in ours, it's actually reversed from the norm, which is very strange, right? And yet, maybe those elements are actually more cultural than they are innate. Like, it's difficult for us to know because of just the sheer power of culture. You know, mm-hmm. To give you an example, like, there are human beings that live just like us, but in Stone Age times, right now, in a forest somewhere in the Amazon, they are living as we did 30,000 years ago, and nothing is different for them. And then the cultural forces that build everything that is growing around them without their knowledge, what kind of values and ideas is it propagating just by the strength of that culture alone and having nothing to do necessarily with what is, you know, imperative or impulsive about humanity?
I feel like that's going to turn into that Village movie by M. Night Shyamalan.
Well, it would be interesting if you actually did like a whole movie where at the beginning it's just it looks like it's apocalypto, but then all of a sudden it's like boom, oh shit, there's a city right here. What the fuck is that?
That's what the Village was. That was the big twist.
Oh, I know it was like that, but then it was like the, I don't know, the 18th century or something like that. I'm talking about.
Okay, you're talking about like
apocalypto style, where it's like communicating like that, and all of a sudden you're just trying to put it from the how would a primitive person sort of like just thrown in that world see everything? Because
I have no idea.
It would be distorted by their own, you know, confusion and fear, right? Like, what would it look like?
You know, I would love to see an experiment done like that, but I can't find. I could not, for the life of me, imagine a humane way to do that.
There is none.
we kidnapped this aborigine and exposed him to New York City on Fox, and this guy is fucking shitting himself. And good lord,
shitting himself
out of fear, not just like I'm assuming they know how to go to the bathroom. I'm just talking. I'm sorry, if I were from my current existence, if I were plucked from here and put into another world where that was like thousands of years ahead of this, I'd probably shit some bricks.
Yeah, I often wonder what it would all be like. I mean, I try to take the long view of history. Yeah, for instance, trying to think about how how the empires that we live in compare to the ones thousands of years ago and what their experience was like. I mean, there is enough history now that there is kind of like the very, very old world that we know nothing about, but that was still fairly technologically advanced, but just doing its own thing and not keeping records because shit was just being destroyed all the time. And then there was a slightly more but still ancient version that we know of. Like, even the Bible, for instance, falls into that category of old world, but not super old world. Like, it bases its mythologies on their own versions of the ancients. You know what I mean?
It's like a giant game of telephone. Like, historically speaking, you know what I mean?
Like, you know, the stories that we watch in movies or those kinds of things, maybe a fraction of those survive, and then they get changed and then taken over, and all of a sudden there's a play written about Neo, you know, their version of plays kind of a thing.
You know, I love to entertain that thought. I'd love to have, like, the Super New Testament with, like, Neo and where he fights Godzilla and, you know, all this crazy... No, but you know what I mean. He fights the giant...
The New Testament.
Yeah, exactly. But I have a feeling, and maybe it's just me, but we're pretty good at our record keeping at this point. Like, I can't, like... Because of the internet, and this kind of ties back to what we were talking about with Mr. Weed over there, is nothing on... Once it's on the internet, it's there. Like, what catastrophe would have to happen so that humanity survives, but the internet doesn't?
Well, there's a couple of things, right? I can name you one pretty simple one.
Okay. Don't say solar flare.
Yeah.
You were going to say solar flare?
Well, not just any kind of solar flare, but a strong enough electromagnetic pulse that could knock out and really disintegrate most of the electronic equipment, leaving us still very much alive. But with, imagine that the internet and computers were dark enough and say, like, there was just our reliance on it was just so imperative that once they were out, we were suddenly in a kind of technological dark age. And now the problem is that everything that we've stored, all this information is contained in documents that now have their own version of what hieroglyphics was to us, a new confounding language to just translate something else that may itself even have a different language. I mean, language evolves so rapidly and quickly sometimes that it can be lost. So it's not impossible. The real problem is that I feel that while the distribution of the information is so wide now that it could be recaptured given the state of technology, have we really thought about bringing that to a one level of simplicity down? You know, like, if every book was now electronic and we had that kind of solar flare, do we lose all books?
Well, I mean, I can't imagine anybody, like, opting to remove any and all hard copies of things. I could see that somewhat happening, let's say, over the long term. But I think, just to give you an example, if we were to talk about our stories, like, how many people have family albums and stuff burned onto DVD-ROMs, right? We won't have the technology to access them, but I'm pretty sure when this hypothetical solar flare thing hits, right, there'll be someone there who will know how to make a computer. There'll be someone who knows how to make a microchip. Like, the knowledge will still be there, right? I don't think we'll...
Well, I'm not sure, because there's been plenty of civilizations through time where knowledge has been lost and then rediscovered. I mean... Archimedes came up with calculus 2,000 years before Newton. It took that long for humanity to rediscover it because his notes were taken by priests, erased, and then written over. You don't think, like, okay, imagine a nightmare scenario. Forget this solar flare thing. Imagine instead a totalitarian theocratic government that decided that they were going to take all of this stuff that we just take for granted, this information that we can just distribute freely, and say, that's enough of that. You're going on the banned list, kind of like the Catholic Church had that book of that list of books which were banned. Yeah, kind of like that, except for now they're trying to do that with the internet and doing some kind of crazy inquisition like assault on anybody who tries to disseminate information in a different way.
So you're talking about basically it'd be like a worldwide North Korea.
Well, maybe kind of thing. Well, I would say that there's lots of examples of places where already they try to censor the internet. I mean, China censors the internet. The U.S. is gaining power to censor the internet.
They are censoring Pirate Bay. From what I hear, from what I've heard, like, in the comments of Pirate Bay, when I go to research and not download, they apparently some people can't access Pirate Bay from the States anymore. Like, some companies just block the IP, like, can't go on it.
Well, that's why they usually change their IPs quite often.
Oh, yeah, there's so many ways around it, but just the fact that there's action being taken.
Well, you know, I don't want to just try to make anyone thinking this is some kind of alarm. I'm some kind of alarmist. I'm just messing around with some dystopic scenarios, if you will, right? Just to say that information, just because now it's widely available, doesn't necessarily make it any more permanent than the Library of Alexandria, in a sense. I just fear that we maybe have a bit, we're a little overconfident. Like, maybe we would need to figure out a way to store information in such a way that it's actually easier to decipher rather than more difficult. Like, that you don't need one level more to access. Because a computer is sort of like, you require a medium, if you want, to access this information. That is one step too many if you want the information to be permanent. Like, imagine you were just storing information in diamonds. How long would that fucking last? And what if there was a sort of like a way to access it, kind of like in Superman, right? Where he's got all those crystals. That might look stupid, but fuck, you can store shit in crystals. You can store light in there, and light is information. So you could just make a whole bunch of fucking crazy crystals that will last billions of years. That sounds like a pretty good storage mechanism, don't you think?
I'm trying to fathom how it would look.
I told you already, it looks like Superman. The movie, the set.
I don't watch the Superman movies. I don't like DC. I like the documentary on the DC comics, and that's the only thing.
You should watch the... Okay, look, the first Superman movie is the first good superhero movie ever made. That's a big deal.
Are you talking about the one with the horse guy there?
The horse guy, Keanu Reeves?
He got kicked off a horse.
Oh, Christopher Reeves, sorry. Christopher Reeves.
We're not talking about the one with Kevin Spacey, right? Is it Kevin Spacey?
No, that was Superman Returns, I think. That was
But I thought the original Superman movies were like goofy, kind of stupid. Like, didn't one of them have like Richard Pryor? And didn't he?
That was the third, and it sucked. But the first one was good.
I'll watch the first Superman movie.
Watch the first Superman and try to sort of like see past what are obviously nowadays crappy seeming like special effects.
I am good at seeing past shitty special effects. I love sci-fi original movies.
There you go. If you can see past that, then you can enjoy.
I will check it out. I won't download it on Pirate Bay, but I'll check it out. Maybe it's on Netflix.
Okay, let's go back to LifeStar, because here's what I wanted to talk about with them before we went on another crazy tangent, is the fact that I find it fascinating that they do everything through group therapy.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking recently how group therapy is a very, very insidious thing when you think about it, especially when it comes to really private issues. Like, I cannot find any other place where you would talk about something as personal as sex in a group. Like, that is cultish, people. Like, that's pretty fucking scary.
Well, one, there's an element of like almost peer pressure for that. But it's an interesting that you bring this up, because I actually had a couple years back. I don't know if I ever brought it up on the show, but I had a bit of a breakdown at work, and I was on a sick leave for a while. I had a really bad case of depression, and I had to go to different doctors and stuff. And one of the doctors I went to wanted me to go into group therapy to talk about my depression and stuff. And I'm like, I'm not going to talk about my sexual identity crises and like my failing friendships and stuff with a bunch of total strangers. And when I told her that, she's like, well, it's your choice. And she got all huffy. She's like, it's like I'm sorry.
Do you not understand that these issues are private? I mean, do people have sex in public? Very rarely.
Yeah. There we go. And if they do, they're arrested. I barely wanted to talk about my private life with you, a doctor. And you're saying, how about you talk to these five strangers about it?
Right, but I have to imagine that the reason why, I mean, there's probably some people that, you know, like the other thing I guess I fear is the fact that things that are believed by groups it strengthens belief. It's kind of like alien abduction groups. They strengthen a ridiculous belief together, and it makes it all the more dangerous.
Well, it's that positive feedback loop, right? Like, it just, you encourage the other guy, and then in turn he encourages the next guy, and it just keeps getting like more and more real.
Yeah, and I'm sure that there are people who go to these sessions too, and they probably shared information, and after a while probably thought, you know what, I wish I wouldn't have shared that. I wish other human beings didn't know that about me. I thought maybe that was a wise thing, because when you read their whole thing, they're like, well, we believe that that secrets are really what where all this behavior comes from. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, what a dangerous thing to say. Oh, my God.
I'm just glad that this is a Mormon guy and not a Scientologist guy. could you imagine?
Well, you know, the Scientologist guy would have recorded everything.
Yeah, and it's like, let us blackmail you.
Oh, they're so scary. They're so scary.
I can picture that guy. I forget the guy's name, but I can just picture him, like, peering in my window, like, you know, with, like, litigious, the bat signal of Scientology. I don't know what it would be.
The bat signal of Scientology.
No, but, like, that guy, he's like a bloodhound for lawsuits.
Well, Scientologists believe that that's the best way to fight suppressive persons, is by using the law.
There we go.
So their warriors, if you want, are lawyers, and they have many lawyers.
Wow. Not enough lawyers to keep L. Ron Hubbard in Europe, but that's okay.
Well, you know, it's funny. L. Ron Hubbard died, like, just before he was going to be indicted on a number of charges that his wife went to jail for.
Well, that's nice. the family that's, you know, commits crimes together, does time together.
Well, did I tell you that sad story about the L. Ron Hubbard's son? I'm trying to remember. I think it was Howard, but I'm not quite sure. Anyways, the one that he was grooming to replace him was gay, and because of his father's, you know, obvious stance about it, he unfortunately killed himself. One of those tragedies.
That doesn't surprise me. Like that shit breaks my heart. That's like, oh my God, that's the kind of thing. And it again, it comes back to the danger of this ex-gay therapy bullshit. It's not an agenda. It's not a political, like, stop, blah, 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 blah. I'll get a word out, I promise. I can say the words. You shouldn't make this about religion, and you shouldn't make it about politics. Sexuality is sexuality, and to say that it's okay to bully or even through an absence of encouragement, basically get people to kill themselves over their sexual identity in the name of anything is just fucking horrible. I'm sorry if this is like a little bit of a soapbox moment, but that's one of those things, like, because I could have very easily been one of those people, like, so easily been one of those people.
Just convinced to try to go straight and have a family and that kind of thing?
Well, dude, As you know, I spent years trying to fix myself, and I didn't have a religious reason for doing it. I was just brought up in an environment where it's like gay people were not necessarily, like, there wasn't anything intrinsically wrong with them. You just didn't bring them around the house. So, like, obviously, like, even though I didn't want acceptance from a god, I wanted acceptance from my family, and I was terrified of losing that. I remember one of the things that one of the arguments that I made when I was struggling with it, like really hardcore struggling with it, was I would rather that my family knew me as a dead straight person than a living gay person. That was something that I actually thought. And I don't have and I can only imagine, like, not only are they feeling the pressure of being accepted by their friends and family, but also, like, the unblinking eye of judgment of the guy who decides what happens to them for the rest of eternity. Like, I can't, that's just wrong. It's so cruel, you know.
Well, how many people die just exactly the way that you said, you know?
Yeah,
where everyone believed that they were straight and really they died not never knowing.
Yeah, like I know, and that's why this stuff resonates a bit with me. Like, it's one of those things that just, I don't think it gets me disproportionately angry, because I think it's good to get angry about this kind of thing if it's anger with motivation. But, like, I feel like I make a tonal shift in the podcast because it's like I get super serious about it.
You should get super serial.
Super serious. No, but that shit breaks my heart. Honestly, whenever I hear of a kid like this, and I remember when I used to do the gay helpline thing. I remember there was this kid, and I spent a night talking to him on and off because he'd keep calling. Because he was religious, and he was worried that he was going to hell. And The funniest thing about that is the whole night, I'm going to tell you, I've never had a more emotionally difficult experience in my life than talking to what was probably like a 13 or 14 year old kid over the phone, trying to convince him that even now it gets me a little choked up. That kid was like, at the end of the conversation, that kid told me basically that I had pretty much saved his life, that he didn't know what he was going to do if I wasn't there, because he needed someone to listen and someone to talk to and someone to tell him he's okay. And what happened, and this is one of the things that I still to this day resent, this was on one of my very first days there. After that night, the guy that was doing like it was like a side by side thing. He was listening in the other room to make sure I was, you know, not doing anything inappropriate, or I wasn't overstepping my bounds, because we're there to listen. We're not there to be psychiatrists. His comment to me was, I can definitely see that you want to help people and your passion is there, but don't, when someone brings up a religious argument against homosexuality, don't engage that. Just say that the Bible is open to interpretation. And I'm like, this kid was thinking of killing himself because the Bible says that he's a horrible human being. And I'm supposed to say, well, you know, some people think that. No, I'm going to say, well, the Bible said lobster is bad in the same verses. So, like, I'm sorry. My priority is with the kids and with the actual victims. I don't give a it's a book, okay? If God's a big boy, he can defend himself.
Well, you know what's crazy about that too is that religion has done you no favors, gay rights movement.
Not at all. And I don't want to be, I'm sorry to turn this into like a bit of a somber.
Do it, man. It's like, good. You changed the tone because you found out the truth about that weed guy and it's not nice.
I genuinely think that they're trying to help, but they're so misled and they're doing so much damage that they can't even begin to imagine what the world, what they're doing to these people. And this guy, basically just validated, albeit anecdotally, but still, he's got the I'm a therapist label, right? So that's all you need. But he basically just validated all this ex-gay, gays can be cured. Even if you are gay, you can choose to have a straight lifestyle, and it is okie-dokie. And if you still want to have sex with men and you find sex with women unfulfilling, that's a failing on your part. Like, are you fucking mental? I wish I had the means to open a fucking foster home for gay kids. You know? That I could just like take these kids and just be like, you know what? Just tell your parents that you're living here for a while. You're going to be taken care of. You're going to get an education. And you're going to come out of this who you actually are. I want to rescue every last one of them. And it breaks my heart that I can't. But I just... it's one of these things. I don't know if it's like a paternal or a maternal instinct or what, but I just want to I just want to grab them and just hug them and tell them it's okay and they don't have to fucking live this horrible life. And every time I read about one that kills themselves, it gets me so angry, and there's next to nothing I can do about it. It just kills me.
I think that people like that, they don't recognize or realize the power of their words. They don't. I mean, think about someone. I was watching that George Tiller documentary on
the assassination MSNBC. Of
Dr. Tiller. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was this, you know, sort of like the way that these people were talking about their strategies for interrupting or trying to change the minds of people going over to these abortion clinics. They don't understand the fact that the people going there already had these thoughts themselves, more than likely.
An abortion is not an easy decision. I know some people argue, and I've had this argument with my friends sometimes, where apparently some people will use abortion as a form of birth control. And I have no doubt that that must happen somewhere, but I don't think that that's the exception that should make the rule. I am totally comfortable saying someone who's getting an abortion has thought about it. Okay, period. And you don't need some last ditch, because you're like at the apex of the emotional craziness if you're going in to get the abortion, okay? That is like the equivalent of, well, not the equivalent, but the best I can describe it is, it's kind of like if you've been rehearsing lines and you're about to go on stage. You know, that just that second before you walk out on stage, that apex of the emotional like fragility and nervousness, and to have some asshole go, "Mommy, don't kill me. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
Are you going to support this baby?"
Oh, yeah. It's just that makes me so sick. And plus, I don't think that people realize that it is during times of heightened emotional state that you will memorize things, you know, like your memory just functions like that. That's why rape is so horrible, because it's just burned in the fucking victim's memories, because the way that your brain functions is that these passive connections, you know, sort of like your memory, your emotional experience, all of these things will be tied together just because of the tethering, if you want, of the fucking brain. So you're cursing a fucking person by doing that. You are cursing their memory. They were going to relive this, you know, in a passive way. Way to go. Way to go.
And it's all for what? The greater good of some cosmic battle? Like, fuck, man, how about you take care of the people that you know are alive, that you know exist, okay? How about you do that?
Well, you know, you have to remember that in a way, a lot of the people that are attracted to these kinds of movements are individuals that feel powerless, and they're very plain and normal, and they have a big problem with this. So they want to feel as though they are doing something amazing and good, you know, that they're doing something like a superhero. And let me tell you something. When you're trying to do good, you realize that it's complicated to do good. You just can't show up and say, "All right, I'm ready to help,"
yeah,
because that's not what's needed, right? It's not just that. There's so much more to it.
There's no issue that's black and white like that. Like, I'm sorry, there aren't any moral absolutes, especially in things about with abortion. I mean, to touch on this a little bit more, it's like, you don't know the story of the person going in. The only thing you know about them is that they're going in to get an abortion. So, like, where the fuck do you get off? You know, hurdling? Are you going to help take care of the kid? Is the kid going to come out a vegetable? Is the kid even going to come out alive? Do you know any of this? No, you just know she's pregnant and walking into a building, and that's reason enough for you to shout these horrible, mind-scarring fucking bullshit obscenities, and it's just...
And to feel, and worse still, to feel sanctimonious while you do it.
Yeah, it's a big fucking pat on the back afterwards.
Yeah, it's like, congratulations, we saved babies. We saved babies. And because, you know, like, superhero, in the superhero world, the bad guy is just clear. It's like, oh, well, there's the bad guy is the person who's aborting all these babies. What a bad guy. Obviously, you have a very childlike understanding of reality, but what a surprise. They're religious people. That's what they thrive on. And, I mean, this is what's scary about these therapists, is that these are children. They have a childlike understanding of reality, and they are spreading their childish bullshit, dangerous-ass bullshit, and poisoning the minds of what are probably mostly young men, which tends to be the focus of these groups.
You're so emotionally fragile at that point, you know? It's kind of the worst time, or I guess the best time, depending on your perspective, to plant a horrible idea like that is when you're at your most vulnerable like that, you know? It's like, I know, you know how awful you feel right now? Well, the reason you feel awful like that isn't because the world wants you to be straight. It's because you know being gay is wrong. Bam, there you go. Now you've fucked this kid up. Good job.
Well, they're very practiced at the art of mind fucking. I mean, the guy's article on his blog is a mind fuck, and it's meant to even confuse and mind fuck people like us who are still kind of like, well, he's claiming this is an individual choice. He's using the type of language that, you know, we feel we're somewhat vulnerable to, saying like, oh, personal decisions, oh, well, those are great, except for that's not a personal decision. You're doing that professionally, you sack of shit.
Well, this is the thing, is he appealed to us not as a therapist. He appealed to us as a person, like as just some blogger guy. But when you put it in the light of the I'm a therapist and I think this is okay, in fact, look at me, I'm perfectly well adjusted, you know.
Yeah, perfectly perfectly. I can't have sex without imagining dudes kind of way. Yeah.
No.
You're doing fine.
I still feel a little bad mocking him because of that. I personally went through similar, but at the same time, I never went out of my way to make sure everybody was as miserable as I was.
And let's not forget the fact that his wife is, she's really missing out there too.
She is. There's a really good documentary for The Bible Tells Me So. I think we've probably touched on it before, but I forget the cardinal's name, but he got married. And when he found out that he was gay and it wasn't something that it was going away, you know what him and his wife did?
No.
They agreed that it was best for the two of them. And it's in the documentary. I can get their names. I just can't find it on the fly. They decided the only way that they were going to be true to themselves is if they allowed each other to be happy. And the only way to do that was with a divorce. And you know what? That makes sense. That's the fair thing. That's the logical thing to do. It's like, you know what? I can't force you to have less of a romantically fulfilling life because I'm too much of a pussy to admit who I am. So, like, come with me on this rabbit hole of deception.
Oh, and plus, it's not like when you divorce your wife and you're gay, it's not going to be the same kind of divorce that you might expect.
I can't imagine there being as much bitterness. You know what I mean? Like, because it's really, I love you, but I'm physically and emotionally incapable of making the same connection, and I don't think that's fair to you. I mean, there's probably going to be a lot less of an aftershock than, you know, hey, I fucked your sister.
Yeah, a lot less. And plus, I mean, she was aware of it from the beginning. When you read the article, she knows. It does not come as a surprise. But she, of course, is supportive towards his terrible decision. Well, there is a financial motive. But, I mean, I don't think that she really understands the fact that this man can still be in your life. See, that's the beauty. He's gay, so there's not going to really be that normal hatred of their other, because you're just like, it's a dude, it's a different sort of like thing altogether. There's no jealousy, it's fine, we can still have a relationship. Why the fuck are you preventing yourself your whole life from being able to experience what it just feeling natural feels like? That just, what a fucking shame.
Well, I think it all, I mean, maybe I'm mixing up my religions, but aren't the Mormons very anti-divorce?
Yeah, they're very anti-divorce, like most other religions.
Well, there you go.
Because, you know, like, because of the whole spiritual children thing and blah, 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 and they take their vows seriously, too. So, of course, there's the religious element right there. Well, you can't divorce good Mormons.
Pretty sure that's the factor. Honestly, if I had to narrow it down, why? Because doesn't he say, like, the only way we could raise kids is if we stayed married? Or I'm paraphrasing, but like, wasn't that pretty much what he said?
Look, I'm pretty sure that the only way that he can stay within his religion and keep his job is to keep living the fucking lie. So I hope that the paycheck is worth it, I guess.
It's hard to feel sorry for him when I'm too busy feeling sorry for all his patients, I guess is my final word on that, I guess.
The rage. Okay, well, We're gonna take a short break. We're gonna reintroduce you. I'm gonna make a little compilation of the audio from part two of the podcast, which is on finding Bigfoot.
It's a much brighter, fluffier subject. We need a tonal shift.
Yes, the second part of the podcast. We need to shift this puppy into funny gear because we got depressing there for a little while.
It sometimes happens, you know. I can make a lot of jokes about a lot of different things, but there's I guess that's, I have a soft spot for that stuff, and I can still make jokes, but there's a part of me that's it affects me on an emotional level. Like, you know, it's not just reporting at that point for me.
Speaking of jokes, let's take a quick break.
For over 50 years, the remote woods of northern Georgia have been a hotspot for Bigfoot activity, with hundreds of documented encounters. Now, the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization, led by Matt Moneymaker, journey to Georgia to investigate the latest piece of evidence, a never-before-broadcast police video that some believe is photographic proof of the Sasquatch. As the team closes in on the truth, they're joined by volunteers from the BFRO, in an effort to determine once and for all if Bigfoot exists in northern Georgia.
I've been tracking Sasquatches for 25 years.
These animals, in fact, are real.
I've seen them. They're here.
I'm having a really difficult time finding an explanation for this.
There's something on the hill.
who think there's a Squatch in these woods.
And what you were listening to was part two of our podcast, Finding Bigfoot, where we talk about this show that Jeff had the brilliant idea of us watching.
you can thank my friend. I have a friend, David, in South Africa who provides me with all kinds of gems, and this happened to be one of them.
I would have never really... I thought, look, because we had done, I don't know if you remember this, but just a number of shows back, because we've covered cryptozoology a couple times together, you and I.
This is the thing, is as far as... If I had to equate myself to any of the people in the atheist spectrum, the person that I would equate myself to the most would probably be Michael Shermer, because I love
or James
I
Randi love, kind of thing
or James Randi, but James Randi I think James Randi is a bit more I find he's a little more angled towards the religious-y stuff right now anyway, but I just identify more with Michael Shermer, which is weird. But just the overall skepticism, and I loved, when I was a kid, I loved the unsolved mysteries.
Oh, God, I loved it too, man. I used to be so fucking scared. Robert Stack and his creepy voice, every time he said that a murderer from the United States was at large and possibly in Canada.
They were always heading to Canada.
They were always.
Non-stop heading to Canada. And the thing that's fucked up about that is, for Transformer nerds, Robert Stack was the voice of Ultra Magnus in the movie. So to have Ultra Magnus tell you a murderer is coming into your house, like, that's fucked up.
You're gonna believe it.
I'm like, seriously, man. He was the rightful heir to the Matrix, if you ask me.
And didn't you live right near the border?
I did. I lived in a town called Rock Island, which is right on the Derby Line border of Vermont. We used to get our milk in the States. To give you an idea, we would walk to the States to get our milk because it was sold by the gallon and it was less expensive. And then they put the growth hormones in and we stopped that.
And then it got then all of a sudden we were having growths in our necks. And then we stopped.
It was at that point we realized that maybe it wasn't worth it. Although I do miss the Yoo-hoo. That's not a euphemism. It's a drink in the States called Yoo-hoo that I love that we can't get.
There's no milk in there, though.
The thing is I remember it being awesome. For all I know, I'd try one now and I'd hate it.
Yeah.
But when I was a kid, I loved it.
I remember those fucking horrible juice containers there that had the aluminum foil lid. And then when you drank it, it tasted like Mr. Freeze juice.
Are you talking about, what's it called? I know. Was it the one where the commercial was like a bunch of T-1000s playing basketball?
What T-1000s playing basketball?
Like they drank. It was like Capri Sun.
No, it wasn't Capri Sun. This was even cheaper than that. This was, you could buy a crate of this.
Was it like Kool-Aid Slammers?
No, it was even more generic than that. This is actually, you know what? It's funny because the only time I've ever seen this drink was in a prison documentary.
Wow. Okay, yeah. There we go.
So that was that drink that... and I thought those were awesome because it had fruit juice taste.
Yeah, with real fruit flavor.
It's got some real flavor in there.
That is one of those... That is like a... you're just... You need to ask questions when you hear something like that.
It's an advertising buzzword that means absolutely nothing.
Seriously, it's like... We engineered this chemical to taste like fruit, but it tastes like fruits that exist in reality.
As opposed to those unreal fruits.
Exactly. It doesn't taste like imaginary mango.
Not mango, Brango. It's the imaginary Brango.
There we go. Although, to be honest, I would totally, if there was a gum flavor called Brango.
And then you wonder why the shows are tangenty. It's all your fault.
Well, okay, one, I'm totally uninformed. Two, I'm thinking about super flexible acrobats doing all kinds of horrible things to me.
What do you mean you're thinking about this? Why are you thinking about this right now?
Because we were talking about acrobats, and I have a thing for circus folk.
What? That was 20 minutes ago.
It was 5 minutes ago in my head.
Time slows down in erotic time.
Exactly. It's,
get your head in the game, sir. Because
blood
right
was flowing
now,
elsewhere.
Because right now we have to talk about finding Bigfoot. All right.
And that is serious business.
It's serious business here. On this.
You need to lead because I'm too terrified by the realness of the science.
Yeah. Well, okay. So first of all, I do have to inform everybody that we've done shows before on cryptozoology. In fact, we have done shows on Bigfoot in the past. But as many of you know, it doesn't matter how many times you actually do a show about something. It's going to always be a problem, and especially when they all of a sudden TV decides to sort of pick it up. You know, a subsidiary of the fucking Discovery Channel would be like, Animal Planet, let's have a Bigfoot show.
That's the part that got to me. Like, I could get if this was on Fox or like NBC or just like a good old TV, like a cable TV show. But this is Discovery, right? Like, just by virtue of it being on Discovery, you're lending it credibility that it really doesn't have. It's not like the Walking with Dinosaurs or things like that. It's some guys go in the woods and pretend to be scientists for 45 minutes.
Yeah. And they have a second season of this fucking show, don't they?
They do. I'm probably going to check it out later because as much as I find it laughably horrible, there's that part of me that loves watching these guys be idiots because I'm one of those people that likes to yell at their TV.
Yeah, I kind of share that. I mean, it is like watching a fucking train wreck, isn't it?
It is because if anybody's ever watched it, they know exactly what I'm talking about. But like basically the main guy comes into every investigation, like the premise
Matt
of the show,
Moneymaker, the Moneymaker, head of the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization, which is basically kind of like saying the Bigfoot campers.
I like the Bigfoot campers. Basically, the premise of the show isn't that we're going to find out if Bigfoot is real or not. It's Bigfoot is real, and we're going to find out if he's hanging out in these woods. Like, that's the premise. And the guy, the Moneymaker guy, and I mean that as a last name and as a career, he wants to, like, he goes into everything believing it's always true. Even if the evidence is stacked, like, as it always is, like, way against him, he's like, no, I choose to believe that this is a Bigfoot because eyewitness testimony, you can't fake that. That guy was scared of a Bigfoot.
He was scared. His brain freaked out. You can't fake that.
You can't fake that, even though the photos that he took could be easily faked and are faked on the show.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I'm like, you can't fake that? Really? Let's deprive you of sleep for 37 hours.
There we go. Or just, how about you go driving at night with legends of Bigfoot in your head because that's what your town is famous for, and then you see something running across the street.
Yeah. There's no way in those dark and frightening circumstances that your minds are going to play tricks on you because your brain is a perfect camcorder.
Exactly. And this is the part that gets to me is the also how they just build on Bigfoot lore. So whatever they need to be true suddenly is true for Bigfoots. Like how some Bigfoots will imitate human speech in the woods. Well, they knock to communicate.
Oh my! Well, you know, here's the first thing I always find funny is now. So I'm not quite sure how they managed to convince, first of all, Animal Planet that this was a good idea. But
I have no idea.
There is always kind of like there's been a few shows like that. What was that other one that you were suggesting we watch?
Oh, Monster Quest, because I want to see them hunt down Mothman and Jersey Devil.
Well, you know what? Here's what's funny. Cryptozoology would have probably died much more recently if it hadn't been for this little fucking giraffe called the Okapi.
But that's not even that recent anymore. Like
that's like the end of the 19th century. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's. I would have figured now with the internet. Like I was surprised that when they went in this show. pardon me. When they went to this show, they went to like this beer and. They call it like a beer and Bigfoot event. And like it was packed with people who were like believers in Bigfoot. I'm like, I didn't realize Bigfoot was – I thought Bigfoot was along the lines of like flat earth. It was just people entertained it because it's funny, but nobody actually took it seriously, you know? I was a little depressed to see that many people turn up for an event with Bigfoot hunters.
But flat earthers take themselves seriously. You don't remember a few months back when we got spammed by those flat earthers?
Yes, but Discovery doesn't give them a show.
Well, they're almost there. I mean, look, if you're doing this whole cryptozoology thing, it just strikes me as sort of weird that, first of all, one of the people that is on their team describes herself as a biologist. All right.
Yeah, and she's their token skeptic, but she's the soft biggest skeptic I've ever seen in my life.
She looks like a little bit like Rachel Maddow. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a busted Rachel Maddow.
Yeah, busted Rachel Maddow. Yeah, I think we know what camp she plays into. Anyways, you know, how you could call yourself a biologist and then run around very, you know, a small woods thinking to yourself, oh, yeah, there's a family of Bigfoot around here with a larger population of Bigfoots that have never been detected and that eat some kind of magical manna that allows them to sustain themselves.
No, they eat deers. Remember that scene where they found a gay deer? No, they didn't kill Bambi. They found a dead deer, and the guy was like, this deer was killed by a Bigfoot. See that broken leg? That's a Bigfoot kill. It's like you're just pulling science out of your ass. And I don't even... Science. Like, there aren't air quotes big enough. Like, my fingers aren't big enough to really accommodate the sarcasm in which I use the word science when talking about these guys.
Well, first off, their kind of science is field research. And I think that's a fancy word for camping. Right?
It really does feel like they're just four of them? There's four of them. There's four of them, and they play around in the woods. And that's all good, and that's fine. Like, if you want to go LARPing in the woods, that's fine. But, no, seriously, it's science LARPing is what exactly it is. It's you go out in the woods and you pretend to be a scientist. I mean, all that's missing is, like, cardboard test tubes. But, that's cool. But then when you go, like, there's this one episode where there's this kid who thinks he saw a Bigfoot, and he's clearly shaken, and he saw something. He didn't know what he saw. And that's understandable because, you know, kids don't know all of the nature, like all of the animals that live around them. But the kid thought he was going to die. And then one of the guys in the show is like, I have no doubt in my mind that you saw a Bigfoot. And it's like, well, way to get this, make this kid ignorant for the rest of his life.
I did love on their season finale of season
the Q&A.
One. Yeah, the Q&A, where there's this... where you see a few shots of kids and they're just like, wow, these guys are so cool. They're hunting Bigfoot. I hope that in the future they feel like the rest of us, betrayed by these idiots that run around doing, you know, playing at science for fucking basically. Like one of the first questions, one of the, you know, the unbelievably and simply brilliant question that just comes out of a person's mouth is, well, if there's so many Bigfoot, why can't we find their bones? Hey, that's a pretty good question. I never actually thought about that one. The answer, oh no, they bury all their bones. They bury every single one of them, huh? Yeah.
All of them. And apparently they find this out by talking to like local tribes. I'm guessing they mean Native American tribes that have some kind of, admire the Bigfoot creature. But I'm like, no offense to Native Americans, but like totem animals and stuff like that, like that is...
It's
part of the culture. It's not real. I don't believe there is a spirit of the coyote or the spirit of the wolf or whatever. You know, it's like, it's a form of religion and worship. But there's no like, we believe in the Bigfoot and we revere it. And oh, by the way, they have like, you know, 2.5 kids and bury their dead. Like. So where are the Bigfoot graves? And can I find like the mass Bigfoot grave?
And apparently they also knock on wood.
They knock on, which I thought was a ghost thing. What the first time I heard the guys like, are they knocking? I was like, I thought they forgot what they were hunting. I thought they forgot what show they were on because they just got confused by the green like infrared and they're just like, wait, is this ghosts or Bigfoots or like what are we hunting again?
Well, you know, something. Knocking happens in the woods.
Yeah, because sound travels and it's the woods.
And animals like deer that have itchy fucking, you know.
Yeah. Or just things fall. You know.
Constant things happening in the woods. It's full of fucking life. Did you think the woods were going to be quiet? Noises? In the woods?
In the woods? For those of you who don't know what that's from, it's from a movie called The Lost Skeleton of Cadavera. It is on Netflix. You need to do yourself a favor and watch it.
Actually, here's a question. How many times do you think we've actually mentioned it on shows together? That movie.
It comes up all the time because it is that good.
We need to, I need to get the guy who made that movie on the show for no reason.
Oh, God, Larry Blamore? Yeah, he would be, I'd love to talk to that guy.
What would you ask him?
I would ask him how he felt with the second one.
Oh, I see. You can rub his nose in it.
No, I want to know what he was trying to go for, because the first one, it was very clear that with the first one, it was a spoof on 50s sci-fi, like sci-fi horror cheese stuff. And the second one was kind of like this weird...
A bit too mainstream?
It was more of a modge podge of like sort of 70s exploration-y, like Dr. Livingston, but it kind of felt a little... It missed the mark a bit. And it was just like the humor was a bit too intentional. It wasn't parody humor. I wanted to know what he was going for. I mean,
I wanted to know what he was thinking. That's what you're saying.
What the fuck was up with that guy, huh? What was he smoking? No, I mean, I love the guy. I think
that's what you want to say to him.
I want to ask him, like, what was his goal?
You
want to
be disrespectful. That's fine.
No, I want to ask a disrespectful question in a very respectful manner.
That's still being disrespectful, you dick.
Hey. Shut your mouth.
You know what? There's an element of this show that I find, because, you know, obviously they have to fill how, what, the shows are, what, half an hour, I guess? No, 45.
No, it's
45
it's
40, fucking minutes.
It flies by, though.
So they have to fill 45 minutes. So one of the things that they decide to do is to reenact video scenes from the blurry videos that everyone has of some kind of like scary thing that might be a Bigfoot.
And the goal is to see if they can duplicate the scare. If they can duplicate the fuzzy video
with high def cameras.
With high def, but the thing is I don't understand, like, to what end? Like, yes, it can be faked. Does it mean it was faked? Well, the moneymaker guy will say no. So why are you, like, just stop masturbating for the Discovery Channel and just find a Bigfoot.
Well, like I said, I mean, you can't actually make a show without something happening. Here's what's crazy, though. Apparently, even according to some of the people on the show, if you can believe this, by the way.
I can believe it.
Yeah. That basically they were saying that they themselves thought that, that it went too far. That it reached conclusions that they themselves say they weren't too sure about. So they're even saying skepticism. They even have skepticism about it.
I'm reminded of that episode of The Simpsons where you remember the Homer Simpson with the candy, you know, like the where they go on rock bottom, and they have
it's such a brilliant name for a show, Rock Bottom.
But
tonight on Rock Bottom.
Rock Bottom. But at the end, when Groundskeeper Willie basically vindicates Homer by showing the clip of what happens. And then they're like, it's Rowdy, Peeper. And then, like, Homer's like, oh my God, that man is sick. And then Marge is like, Groundskeeper Willie just saved you. He's like, yeah, but listen to the music. It's the same thing. They play that, like, doo-doo, like, oh my God, what was that? When in reality, she could have just been wondering, like, where her keys were. Oh, where? Oh, there's my keys. But you put that music, and all of a sudden, it's fucking Nightmare Inn.
Well, that is one of the things that I find so annoying about American reality television. I actually will watch reality television from the UK. It's more specifically, I watched a few shows, one of them being Kitchen Nightmares, because I love Gordon Ramsay.
Yeah, but there's a difference between a reality show / like a reality documentary. Like, I would say, like, Kitchen Nightmares is one of those kinds of things, because it's basically just let's hype the action, like, play up the action, but at the end of the day, something's actually happening. You know what I mean? Like, they're making meals and they're fixing a kitchen. It's like This Old House on acid.
On acid, I see. I like that. Well, no, but the thing, what, because Kitchen Nightmares has an American counterpart to it, but I can't watch it.
It's the same guy, right?
Yeah, it's the same guy, but I can't watch that version of the show because it's awful. You realize that in American television, they always, the cues have to be so obvious that everyone gets it. So they're always doing, like, winning, music, compelling.
Just commercial, like, break goes here.
Oh, you're like, it's not compelling. Stop trying to explain to me how I should feel. But with
it's kind of like a laugh track in a documentary.
Well, I mean,
you know,
well, you have to tell people how to feel, because again, they're in the woods,
mm-hmm.
doing nothing. I'm still surprised that they managed to actually have any content whatsoever. I mean, you'll be bored out of your mind watching it. Unless something happening where Bobo, which is basically their monkey guy, because he's
a
giant,
he's like
lumbering.
A monkey stand-in.
Yeah, he's a monkey stand-in. So anytime they have to do something, they're like, All right, let's get Bobo to run across the street dangerously while we film it and hopefully
while
not
we,
run across.
While we chase him with a car at night.
And what was great, too, is that during that test, their response is saying, well, it could not, the footage, original footage could, had to be a Sasquatch because Bobo didn't run gracefully.
Across. I'm like, he's just out of shape. He's a Sasquatch hunter.
He's like this big, tall, pot-smoking-looking guy.
Yeah, he looks like a cool guy, to be fair. He looks like a cool guy, but he doesn't look like he's going to be winning any marathons.
He looks like the kind of guy that you want to go drinking with.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, if I was, like, that specific episode, the whole catalyst was a police car coming up, and, like, they catch this guy, this creature running into the woods. And I'm like, let's just say I was a guy, and I had drugs on me, and I saw a police car coming up the road. Yeah, I'd bolt pretty fast, too. Just a thought. Maybe I'd have a little more adrenaline than the, let's see if a Sasquatch is here. My friend's going to try to run me over.
I just love also that they never seem to figure out the fact that footage is not science.
Or their love of eyewitness testimony. That one factor that is totally inadmissible anywhere. It's like, I saw it with my eyes. I'm convinced.
Oh, yeah. Eyewitness testimony. The least reliable thing in the fucking universe.
And the way they guide the witnesses, it's like, and were his eyes this big or this big?
Did your feared monkey brain see eyes that appeared ginormous?
Exactly. Were they, you can't see me because it's radio, but like I'm nodding, you know, were they red? No. Or green? Yes.
Well, what did you think of the other guy, the weird... the one that looked like a gay Richard Dreyfuss. What'd you think?
I thought there's of that group. I feel that there are two of them who like to, for lack of a better word, play doctor: the skeptic and that guy. But neither of them are terribly good at what they do. So I found that he always knew how to throw the lingo around, but he never really said anything important.
Yeah, Cliff Barachman.
I'm so bad with their names. I remember Bobo Moneymaker and Rachel Maddow.
Her name was Renee Holland.
Yeah, you got the wiki page open in front of you, don't you?
No, I'm just doing this all from memory. Of course I've got the wiki page open.
There you go. I'm just saying.
None of these people can stick into my brain as opposed to, you know, like, for very long. I'm sure I will have forgotten about them in about a week's time.
You don't think Bobo is an important historical figure?
Anytime you got a guy named Bobo doing science, you know it's good science.
You know, you had your Leonardo da Vinci growing up. I had my Bobo. Okay, I wanted to be a Bigfoot hunter like Bobo. You know, by the time he was my age, he had seen like 5 Bigfoots.
Wow, what an amazing man! And he had plaster cast over 30 smears in the ground.
There we go. He managed to pour more clay into the soil than anyone I know.
One of the things I find the most fascinating about this whole, we'll put this in the realm of cryptozoology where it belongs, and we'll just say that one of the things that I find interesting is that the people in it, they take themselves seriously enough that they really dislike, like actually for the most part, Bigfoot believers detest the BFRO.
I was hearing this, like, there's, like, a division in, like, that's, like, they're not serious. It's like the ghost hunters, like, paranormal state versus the real ghost hunters, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was actually reading an article from this one woman who was complaining the fact that the psychic on Paranormal State, everything he was repeating had already been coached to him and that they were big fakers, but that she herself was a gifted psychic. And you're just like,
I love that.
What you are is deluded. He at least knows that it's a scam. That's why he's making money from it.
There we go. I mean, I think we've already done one on Paranormal State, but man, I could go back to Paranormal State
any day. Yeah. Just a
we should actually watch his other show, because Chip Coffee has this other show called it's like Psychic Kids.
Oh no, which, Indigo Kids or something maybe.
No, it's called Psychic Kids, and he basically goes to like kids with like emotional problems and convinces them that they're psychics. I'm like, get this guy away from kids.
Put him in jail.
Put him in jail. this guy, he's like Jenny McCarthy. You know, it's like, get him away from your kids. Don't let him near your kids. I don't care how jolly he looks. Get him away from your kids.
The things he's going to fill their minds with is sheer poison.
Empty their minds of.
Well, no, I think at this point, though, the dangerous thing that we do is we feed into the delusions of people. We don't, mm-hmm. we're not emptying them of information. We're filling it with just the bad kind.
Yeah, it's like, don't discourage sick people to not go to the doctor, like... Or don't discourage them from going to the doctor. Don't do that. It's bad.
Yeah, for whatever reason, if you're saying, an alkali body chemistry will prevent all diseases. No, it won't. Shut your irresponsible mouth, you yeah, fuckface.
Seriously, would you like to speak at their funeral?
Well, I still kind of find it a little hilaro-tragic that Steve Jobs himself, 6 months into his cancer diagnosis, does the whole, you know, diet thing. Yeah, well, I wonder what the difference 6 months could have made.
There's another really good example of is it cognitive dissonance, where you can just be, he's like a super smart guy, like obviously knows science. Why would he not, like, why for that one thing, you know? I don't get it. Like, was he just afraid of needles?
I think there's probably a part of it. Yeah, definitely. Anybody who's gone through that treatment, I mean, some people will tell you that they're not sure if it was entirely worth it. Do you remember Hitchens' last article?
I try not to, man. I don't like to remember Hitchens.
His prime when he was powerful and witty and funny and
brave. Even the thing is, I don't think I ever really personally touched base with any good atheist fans about my feelings when Hitchens died. So if you'll indulge me for just a little bit.
Absolutely, dude.
When the thing with Hitchens is that of all of the atheists, let's say celebrities, you know, like the names that everybody knew, Hitchens was my favorite to listen to.
Oh, God.
And I think I think for a lot of people that was the case, because he was a curmudgeon, but he was like our curmudgeon, and he didn't take shit from anybody. And listening to him in his prime was like, man, he's the one who's getting shit done. And I felt that as his cancer progressed and as he got worse, when I watched one of his last presentations. It was the one where I think it was the one that you went to, actually. And every time he would cough, I would be like, oh my God, is this it? No, I'm seriously, no joke. I was like, this great man is like, please, like, stop doing this. I'm begging
you're
you.
You're killing,
like,
yourself.
Seriously, I admire the shit out of the guy. Like, I still listen to his old debates, and I'm just like, this guy, like, there's no replacement for him in the atheist community. And this is another thing where I think we would need to pencil in another topic. But I think that it's kind of at this point, without Christopher Hitchens, the whole atheist movement is almost without a driver. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, like, I definitely know that.
And that's something that also worried me, because I think that a lot of the atheist movement died with him. I know I felt it personally. Like, he was the champion, you know?
He was the golden boy.
Exactly. And who's next in line? I mean, as far as sheer debating prowess goes,
I can find no one. I can find no one. But at the same time, he was not a young man. Okay,
I understand. I understand that he's not a young man.
But it's just because he part of what made him who he was. I feel, at least, because I was reading his biography, mm-hmm. and I would venture to say that, you know, while he would have been a charismatic person to listen to, he wouldn't have been a very compelling person. You know, even in his early 30s. Like,
well, no, in his younger days, he was a bit of a whatchama, hisma-watchit.
Yeah, well, lots of great men have been like that. I mean, Charles Darwin, do you know what he was like in his youth?
I do not.
He was basically more interested in shooting birds than in studying. He was a lazy man. He had, you know, his last hope to escape a fate that he didn't want, which is basically being in the clergy, which is kind of like your ultimate compromise to be able to still do something with your life and not be a layabout. He instead decides to go on a ship for 3 years. A ship, a tiny compartment just to be away from it all. And that's what makes him a great, great, great man. And you know what? Like, I feel like it's impossible for us to really actually know who the next great one is, because they will be a product of the
because he's still cooking.
He's a cooking out there. And you know what? My hope is that he listens to the show. And so when he's like, I'm this brilliant man, and the reason I
and I'm British.
Because I have to imitate it sort of Hitchin style, and it's very bad. Right. But okay, no, maybe he has a Lebanese accent. I don't know. Anyways,
whatever.
Wherever this person is from, he, she would say, I listened to that show and it inspired me to be the fucking most awesome debater ever.
I don't think Christopher Hitchens would call himself the most awesome, but all right.
This is the future.
I'm the bestest debater. Yeah,
this is the future. Language has changed in the future.
I agree, but what's going to happen in the meantime? I think that's a podcast in and of itself. I think that's something we should touch on, though.
What happens in the meantime is a good question. I don't know.
Where is the atheist movement? I'd like to know.
I think it's actually my opinion about it is that in a way it'll become much larger and then become more fragmented. Mm. Because all movements do that. But
right.
It doesn't really necessarily matter if the fragmentation don't veer away from the main points. Because any group of individuals will find points in common and points that are not in common. And, you know, there might be their reaction to certain elements in the scene will ultimately either sort of like alienate some or include others. That's just how it is, because we don't all agree on things.
We'll have like Protestant atheists and Reform atheists.
Well, in a sense, I mean, like even when you ask, what is a person, who is a person culturally, right? A person could say, well, I am a this atheist, where atheist becomes just sort of like a kind of added nomenclature to describe the fact that you were not a believer in it. That's why, I mean, even Julia Sweeney describes herself as, I think, a Catholic atheist or a Christian atheist, where she says, culturally, I feel still attached to those things, but I don't actually really believe in it. You know, there are atheistic Jews, you know, that still maybe identify themselves with it culturally and say, this is my culture rather than this is my belief system. So I think actually atheist is not necessarily fully used as a word as much as it could be. I think it is a nice addition to, you know, what a person is. But the most, you know, like it is impossible for it to ever be a unified movement, because in the future, of course, it won't be. I mean, there are plenty of people who are non-believers who listen to my show who are probably utterly distressed at some of even my beliefs. Maybe they think I'm too leftist. Maybe some think I'm not enough. It doesn't matter,
You're
right?
A madman.
I'm a madman trying to corrupt the youth. It doesn't matter. In any case, we're not all going to be in agreement. I mean, the one thing that we all can agree on is that assumptions that cannot be proven are not to be accepted. And, you know, from there on in, what can be proven and what works and that kind of stuff is open to debate. And I think that for now, the best way to do things is to always be in alliance with one another, but not necessarily in agreement with one another.
All right. Well, I still think we should touch on it in more detail. I think it would be a really interesting chat. Maybe get some of the other co-hosts in on it, too.
That's a good one. I mean, I'd love to do one, like especially have all the co-hosts together. I mean, I wanted to do this, but you had said no originally when I was in Montreal. You didn't want to do it.
Well, it's because the last time we did one before, and it's more it was just difficult because I personally don't like to interrupt people. As anybody who watched the live podcast knows, like I didn't say much because I didn't want to interrupt people. So I ended up kind of just saying like two or three words, right? I think if it would be good to have, if we could get it in a format where it would be maybe not a debate per se, but it would be kind of interesting if there was a way that like we could divide the camps and each one of us would have like a topic that let's say we disagree on. And we could have like, you know, a formal debate where it's like, okay, I'll get 5 minutes for my opening speech and then Ryan gets one. And then it could be something we could look at in the future. But I think if we could organize it in such a way that we're not always talking over each other, which is going to be difficult now, especially since it's online. I'm down if we can figure out a way to do it.
I'm sure I can come up with some kind of solution. I mean, one of the things that I'm hoping to do is when this book Kickstarter thing gets going, and I have confidence that I think we can do even better than 10,000. You know, there's lots of book projects that have done two or three or 10 times that. just because based on the strength of their premise. Mm-hmm. And while I don't think it can do 10 times as much, I think it can do enough that I can invest some of it back into the show, into the podcast, into the site, all these things that I've wanted to do since day one. You know, everything along the way of Good Atheist has always been a compromise because we've never had the fucking budget to do what I wanted to do. I've had to learn all this stuff myself, and I'm terrible at everything that's web related. It's just awful. Like the fact that it's just running now is a miracle. In the completely scientific term.
Well, yeah. Well, I'll let it slide. I'm not a pedant. I'm not a pedant when it comes to the word miracle.
Good.
I think we all understand what it can mean.
Yeah, exactly. And those that believe it's an actual thing. I mean, come on.
It's an amazingly unlikely event. There you
exactly.
go. That's it. Case closed. So, are we talking more about Bigfoot? I think we
pretty much hit the wall on that one. I think we should pretty much wrap up the show.
All right.
And remind everybody to stay tuned. I'm going to be sending almost all, like, everybody who's a member will be getting an email shortly, because I just have to finish a couple of, like, coloring touch-ups and the title. And then this puppy goes live. And everyone who's ever said that they were looking forward to the book should go to the Kickstarter page. This is going to be so important. Like, the future of the Save Good Atheist campaign really relies on this as the keystone for it. The book allows everything else to sort of, like, progress forward. And I actually think that, you know, in retrospect, the way that things have been going in terms of me working on it and getting, sort of, like, a lot of stuff done for it, and it's coming together along more and more every day, I think everybody's going to really flip out. It's going to be the best of the Bible stories with the jokes refined, and then a whole bunch of history portions to just pretty much put the final nail in the coffin. It'll be the book that you give someone saying, like, oh, well, the Bible is true. Bam, give him volume one from the Old Testament and be like, well, he's buried that one. And
you could make it, format it kind of like, you know, the Jon Stewart books, the Daily Show books.
Well, there's going to be lots of art in,
like,
the
multimedia
book
and
try to be funny and stuff like that. Although I don't want to do as much as what they did in theirs, because I think that sometimes they totally, it's hard to read. You know what I mean?
It was a coffee. It wasn't something you read from start.
No. This one will have more of a read from start to finish kind of thing. And also, you know, you have to remember that for the audiobook version of it, it's going to have to sort of, like, come out sounding pretty. Mm-hmm. Like, pretty fluid. Otherwise, it'll sound odd and crappy if it's going to be the audiobook. And a lot of people are looking forward, I think, more to the audiobook version of the book.
Well, it would be like a super extended podcast. So I would.
It would be like
that.
A 7 or 8 hour podcast. It'd be pretty nutty.
There you go. And you could do voices.
See, you want me to? That adds to the production value here.
Why not? like you're reading a kid a bedtime story. I'm Noah. Get in my ark.
I'm gonna have to put that one up to some voting here, because I feel like that might make it seem a bit silly.
That would totally kill any credibility you have.
Although all the stuff that God says, maybe I can add the booming voice if people really ask for it, kind of like the Ask God booming voice that I had going on.
I think for the sake of professionalism, you read it like an audiobook. I'm full of ideas that will sink this ship.
I see. So don't listen to whatever Jeff says. All right.
Well, you know, you can listen to some of what I say, but
how can I tell the difference?
If it's a clearly stupid business decision, you don't listen. That's the rule.
Okay.
If I say make funny voices to sell your book.
All right.
Exactly. Like, get one of those inflated car, like those flaily mans that they have outside of car.
Oh, the inflated person that sort of
that flail about. Yeah, yeah, get one of those and, like, put that outside your house. Like, ask me about Jesus.
That is one way to get attention.
Although technically, if God had that voice, I think that'd be pretty awesome. Gonna have to smite y'all.
What a frightening God that would be.
My apologies to anyone listening in the South.
Or my apologies to anyone that can't bear. You know, sort of hearing anything at that decibel level. Okay, well, with that, I'd like to thank everybody who's a contributing member. Since you're the ones who are listening to the show, we wouldn't be able to do this if it wasn't for you guys, and we're counting on you with the Bible Stories book. And because this is what I'm putting 100% of my effort into. And when the campaign starts, there's going to be a whole bunch of free shows that are going to be Bible story shows, which are going to be, you know, meant to excite you, to entice you. Because the trick with Kickstarter is you always got to keep shit updated. So
there you go.
There you go. It's going to be the shows. Now you're going to see me working on the book live and hopefully with some hilarity.
I think so. Well, we can. That's pretty much a given. We're pretty good at that.
All right. With that, my name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Jeffrey Jones.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody.